Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday. It's August 22nd, currently 57 degrees in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 58 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday to you and the listeners out there. As we kick off our day, you know, things are not too bad. We've got a mixture of sun and clouds and comfortable temperatures, but things may change quickly as we go into the afternoon hours. We're going to be looking at some monsoon moisture squeezing up from the south as we go throughout the rest of today into the afternoon hours. And you mix that with some daytime heating, and that's likely going to pop up scattered showers and thunderstorms as we get towards, let's say, after 2, 3 o'clock this afternoon, as that pattern returns across the area. Now, these thunderstorms will be slow moving, so if you do get underneath one, they are going to produce some very heavy rainfall in a short period of time. You could pick up a quick half inch to an inch of rainfall in very little time, and of course, that could lead to a flash flooding threat. So the risk of flash flooding is elevated if you see one of these thunderstorms today. Otherwise, in Park City, high temperatures today will climb into the upper 70s to lower 80s, and then, of course, in the Heber Valley, will climb into the mid 80s before those thunderstorms start to pop up across the area. But do keep the rain gear handy, because even though we start the day off quiet and dry, we will likely see those scattered showers and storms ramping up as we go into the afternoon hours. Now, there's also a very low-end marginal risk that one or two of those storms could become severe this afternoon. We do have a minor severe threat going on today. That means that any of those storms could produce some wind gusts up to 60 miles per hour. We could also see some small hail developing with some of those storms. So again, we'll want you to make sure you have a way to get some weather alerts as we go throughout this afternoon, as that chance of thunderstorms starts to return to the forecast. Now, as we go into our Friday, TGIF, it's at least going to be Friday, but we're also going to be seeing an increasing chance of those showers and thunderstorms. So while today we'll have a scattered chance of a few showers and storms in the afternoon, I think a better chance at any point in time during the day on our Friday, and then during the Friday afternoon evening time frame, showers and thunderstorms will likely become more widespread across most of the Wasatch back. So keep that in mind, that a little weather day is likely for your Friday. Same story, any of those storms could become severe with some gusty winds up to 60 miles per hour and some small hail. But the good news is it's going to help to start to lower those temperatures. So in Park City, highs will likely hold in the 70s as we go into our Friday afternoon. And in the Heber Valley, highs only in the low 80s. And then we start to talk about the good news. As we get towards the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we start to see some drier air moving in as that front finally makes its way through. We've been talking about it all week, and it's still on the cards as we go towards the weekend. A very slight chance of a sprinkle as it passes. But the bigger story, the cooler temperatures. We're looking at highs only in the 70s in Park City and probably right around 80 in the Heber Valley as we go into your Saturday with lots of sunshine. And by Sunday, we're talking about low temperatures well down into the 40s across both Park City and in the Valley areas, with highs in the 60s probably in Park City and only in the low to mid 70s in the Heber Valley. So we just got to get through the next couple of days, Leslie, and then the weekend, we're going to get to live for the weekend this weekend.
Okay, looking forward to it. Thank you, Cedric.
Thank you.
And a real quick trails report. Laura actually out of town and just asked me to pass this along to you. So the Mountain Trails Foundation crews will be doing some maintenance work on Lower Seldom Seen this morning. The trail will remain open, but please use Jenny's or CMG as your downhill options. Rocky Mountain Power installing some conduit pipe just off the Mid-Mountain Trail. That's just above King Road near the top of Mother Urban. Oh, I did see that. I was wondering what that was. The resort also has some snowmaking work going on that impacts Mid-Mountain on the Canyons Village side, where it crosses the Another World ski run. That trail does remain open. And the National Ability Center Summit Challenge starts this Saturday. Summit Challenge will be utilizing all of the commuter paths in the basin this Saturday, as well as Art on the Trails will be on McLeod Creek on Saturday as well. So a big thank you to Laura for providing that, and again with our weekly trails report. The Summit County Council met yesterday. On the phone now with a recap, I have Council Chair Melina Stevens. Good morning, Melina.
Good morning, Leslie. Sorry about my tardiness. I was having some connectivity issues.
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds good now. Let's see. The council spent a lot of time in closed session yesterday discussing litigation, property acquisition, personnel, the things that you legally can close a meeting for. Do we have any answers about how to proceed with the West 200 South Road issue? Again, this is the road to Wakara Ridge, the only entrance. And Summit County residents a little bit upset just by all of the dirt and construction and speeding happening there.
Absolutely. So last week we met jointly with the Wasatch County Council to discuss the 200 South Road as it crosses into both jurisdictions. Where we landed that meeting was Wasatch County was going to go back and get a copy of the development agreement to our legal team so that we could review that, as well as they were going to review that, the WCARA development agreement, as well as beginning a subcommittee where we could engage with stakeholders, both neighborhood members, maybe, you know, the whole slew of, we could have some Camas City, Francis City represented, council members, members from, you know, the WCARA team or 2HEY team, to really make sure that we understand what the issue is and what potential ways forward there are with this, aside from just closing the road, which is still a possibility. We're looking to see if there are other ways forward that can benefit Summit County and allow access. And maybe there is, maybe there isn't. We will find out.
Okay, still to be determined. Well, it had been, I think, years since the county council met with the Wasatch County Council. Any plans to do that more often, more regularly?
So the last time that we met with Wasatch County Council, I believe, was 2 or 3 years ago, and it was regarding High Valley Transit prior to their annexation into district. Which they're currently working on. So they're still contracting with us. They're looking to annex still. With that, we haven't met regularly. I think as a result of the meeting last week regarding the 200 South Road, we realized we really need to be meeting more frequently, whether that's annually, biannually, or an annual meeting with our staff, with our councils, and more regular meetings between our staff. But the issues that are within Summit County are also the same issues, or very similar issues, within Wasatch County. And the more we can work together to solve collective issues like the one we're seeing with this road that crosses into both of our jurisdictions, I think the more we'll be able to actually deal with these issues for our constituents in a meaningful way.
All right.
Our problems cross borders.
Sure. Any updates from the Dakota Pacific Subcommittee?
So there are no updates right now. We're still working on the financial feasibility. I would anticipate that there will be a public update within the next month, and that will be noticed for anyone who is interested. There's still just, again, the subcommittee is determining if this project, now that it's been determined what might be built there, if a deal could be had, is there a financial feasibility for a deal that could be had? As far as the public-private partnership, is that something that we could do collectively, so that we can then bring the totality back to the public, which again will all be negotiated in public?
Yeah, so the Summit County Council members Candace Hart and Chris Robinson, I believe, are part of that subcommittee. Do they report to you with any updates, or do you get it the same time the rest of the council gets it?
So, I mean, council is apprised when there is updates. Like I said, there's not current updates that are ripe for public.
Okay, let's see. The 30-acre Klein Dolly parcel in Jeremy Ranch. We had an open house back in June. Some plans were presented to Summit County Council. I think you wanted to see something a little bit more substantive. But what are the next steps here?
With Klein Dolly, we'll be having another public meeting to determine how we want to move forward with an RFP. I believe staff is working on what that might look like so that we can collectively decide if we want to move forward in that direction, what types of uses we would contemplate within an RFP. We've done some of that work already, but really digging in and getting more specific now that we've, you know, brainstormed at both as a community and as a council what that might look like with an RFP, it would need to get much more specific. Are we going to swap land with the fire district and include a new fire station there, for instance? That would need to be vetted. We'd need to go through that process. Is there going to be housing, a park, light commercial? We need to make those decisions. And again, that will all happen in a public meeting within the next couple of months.
Okay. And then there were a couple of public hearings at the meeting last night, continuing work on both the Snyderville Basin and Eastside Planning Development Code. So what? We're doing this rewrite of the development code piece by piece?
So last night was actually not reflective of the general plan rewrites that are being done. Last night, the code changes were reflective of new legislation that was passed by the legislature last session that we had to get into compliance with. So the legislature passed a new law as they've been going through with land use laws and really taking away some of the local control. This was one of those instances where they have a prescriptive process now that all counties and cities must go through. And so we, with subdivision plats, you can only have one public hearing. There's a very specific timeline that has to be complied with. And we had to get that into our code in order to be compliant with state statute.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I wanted to really thank everyone who came and participated with the 200 South conversation last week. Also, there were many residents that were in attendance, and I know we've been receiving some feedback, so really appreciate all of the residents and particularly those that came to public input to put this on our radar to begin with. We sometimes don't know what the specific issues are in individual neighborhoods unless neighbors come forward and voice those concerns. And so it really, really appreciate the engagement of our constituents and also our staff who've been working very hard to be able to come up with both solutions and to engage with all parties on this and many, many other issues.
Okay. Melina, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Melina Stevens is the chair of the Summit County Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Next week, Mount Lance Community Housing Trust will host two meetings, one in Park City, the other in Heber City, to learn more about the economic impact of affordable housing. On the phone with details, I have the executive director of Mount Lance, along with a consultant who helped prepare the study. I've got Jason Glidden from Mount Lance and Andrew Knutson from the consulting company. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Jason, maybe you start by giving us a little bit of background to this. Mountain Lands, I understand, received money from the Chamber Bureau's sustainability grants to do what exactly?
Yeah, the funding came from the Sustainable Tourism Grant from the Park City Chamber, but this started probably a lot further back than when we, about probably 5 or 6 years ago, when we saw a study that was done in Vail that it's very similar to this. And we said, you know what, we really should be looking at trying to do something for that here in the Wasatch Back. So that was really the start of it, and we were able to do this grant to go ahead and fund this with EPS, Andrew and EPS out of Denver to get it done.
All right, so Andrew, maybe you can explain what is meant by economic impact, especially when it comes to affordable housing. I mean, we usually hear about the economic impact of the Sundance Film Festival coming to Park City, bringing tens of millions of dollars in tax dollars, or the economic impact of the ski industry. But what do you get by building affordable housing other than having a place for normal people to live?
Well, I appreciate that question. I think that's a terrific question. There's two different ways to think about affordable housing. And there is one of the more conventional ways, which is to think about it in terms of a lack of affordable housing resulting in the erosion of community, which is very true. More importantly, it leads to a contraction of economic activity. And so by quantifying the economic activity and economic drivers that come out of a local workforce, and that really is, I think, the answer to your question, is that it's really about what can happen to the local economy when we have a local workforce. And conversely, what happens to the local economy when we don't have a local workforce? And that really is the emphasis of the study.
All right. Well, I want to get back to that. But I guess some would argue that it's the second homes that bring the biggest economic impact. They pay twice as much in property taxes, about twice as much. They don't get any fee waivers when they're building their homes. And you know what? The owners are only around some of the time. So the day-to-day services aren't impacted like what a full-time resident would create. So,
yeah, also. A very good question. I love it. It is true that in terms of fiscal revenues to the county and to the local municipalities are driven in part from property taxes, in part from building permit fees, things you just noted. They really mainly are driven by retail sales tax. And there again, you might be right. There is some expenditure that comes out of a second home resident or a part-time resident. But the lion's share of the economic health of the local governments comes from retail sales tax. And getting the retail shops up and running is critical to driving that sales tax revenue. And we see in other communities, and just by way of background, I've been with Economic and Planning Systems for 25 years. I'm the managing director of the Denver office. We work throughout the Rocky Mountain West, and we have our current and previous clients include Aspen, Pitkin County, Telluride, San Miguel County, Vail, Eagle County, Jackson, Teton County. We know in these locations that businesses start to shut down. They'll be open 5 days a week instead of 7 days a week. They will limit their hours. And guess what? Rent is paid 7 days a week. Revenue needs to come in 7 days a week. And the only way to make that happen is with a full staff.
So give us kind of, I mean, the Reader's Digest version of the highlights then of what you found then in terms of what affordable housing brings to a community.
Yeah, sure, certainly. The bottom line is that investing in rental housing generates an ROI, return on investment, of about 5.8 times the investment. Ownership has a corresponding ROI of about 1.4 times the investment. The differential is in part due to state and federal grants that are more available on the rental side, thus reducing the initial investment. Investment is the numerator, return is in the denominator, the ROI is the resulting fraction. So really there's incredible returns by investing in the local workforce. And that is the key message that we're hoping that the community becomes, that there's an awareness that there's an economic return from this kind of an investment.
All right. Talk a little bit about the specifics then. I mean, I saw in some of the part of the report, I mean, what we're doing is that we're reducing commuter time. That's good for the commuter and the others who are driving.
Right. Yeah, I think you pulled out one of the most salient factors of the study is that the growing reliance on the commuter employee and the cost associated with the commuter employee. We quantified where all of the employees come into the Wasatch Back from their locations throughout Utah, and we quantified it down to, we got about 99% of all of the commuters and then quantified the time that they incur to come and the other costs associated with commuting. But more than anything, the fact of the matter is that these commuters have a lot of other options that are often closer to home than to driving all the way up into the Wasatch Back. That's the biggest risk of the entire Wasatch Back is this greater reliance on the commuter workforce, which are going to ultimately opt out to other locations that are easier to get to and pay at the same wage levels. And if I can add, the biggest impact we think is going to be to small businesses locally. Large businesses, national businesses, they have a little bit more resilience. They have a little bit more reserves to dip into. It's the local small businesses that are going to hurt the worst.
I also noted one of the findings you had was that this affordable housing creates a new student generation, creating, you know, $180,000 per year for the 40 new students coming to school. But don't you need to offset that with the capital cost now of having to build new schools or of having to hire more teachers to teach them?
True. Those are good points. And there's two questions going on right here. And one is, does the state of Utah fund schools adequately? And that is a question. We do a fair amount of work in Utah, and that's a question that comes up in a lot of our conversations, and actually not just Utah. Certainly in other states throughout the Rocky Mountain West, that's a question. So that's a different topic. But for now, we know that the state does provide a per capita allocation each year to local school districts. And assuming that the capital costs are fixed, and assuming that the, you know, the essentially the teaching workforce is in place, each marginal increase of a student nets an increased marginal revenue to the school district. So, and there is, you know, corresponding demand. And just so that listeners can understand, we did a hypothetical of 100-unit project, of which based on local demographic patterns, that would typically generate 40 new students into the K-12 system. So that's the 40. That's the origin of the 40 students. And there is a marginal increase of revenues and resources for the local community. And depending on where that threshold is, if you can enjoy that and benefit from that marginal increase without incurring a capital expense for another school, it's by far a net benefit to the local district.
Okay. There is a lot more in this report to dig out. Jason, you've got two meetings, as I mentioned, set for next week. If people would like to learn more, come and ask questions. When and where do they show up?
Yeah. So the first one's going to take place on this coming Monday, August 26th, from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's going to be in Heber at the Heber City Police Public Safety Building in the community room, and that's located at 301 South Main in Heber. And then on Tuesday, the next day, August 27th, we'll be at the Park City Library at the Sandy Auditorium over on Park Ave from 6 to 8 p.m. And we'll be able to go into a lot more detail. Like you said, there's a lot in this report, so we really would love the community to come out and see a presentation on the findings and then engage in a meaningful discussion about affordable housing and how we can address some of the housing challenges that we're seeing here in the Wasatch Back.
All right. And has that the report findings been published on your website or any place that people can go and look at it?
We will have those posted on the website, and that's housinghelp.org.
Okay. All right. Sorry to leave it at that, but that's all the time we've got. And Andrew, will you be out for these two meetings as well?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the community conversations, so we'll be there and look forward to it.
All right. That's Jason Glidden and Andrew Knutson. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.